This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You gotta see the baby. When are you gonna see the baby?
Family Matters.
Welcome to Joy 94.9 Family Matters, where we are talking everything related to same-sex families, children, parents, and the laws.
Correct.
And we've got some very special guests this week to join your co-hosts. I'm Adrian Beck.
Hello.
That last show, again, amazing.
Oh, no, it was great.
Yeah.
I flew in for New Zealand just for you people.
I'm David, by the way.
Oh, hi, David.
Hello.
Nice to see you, Dave.
Going straight there.
How you
and
going?
David as well. And
got a date yet, Dave?
Still find... Was it find
Hashtag
David
find David date,
no,
boys.
Nothing at the moment.
Get on the Facebook page. Have a look. He's cute.
This week, we are talking all things law.
Oh, no. Do I get paid extra?
Oh, what's your charge? Don't ask. We can't afford it.
You can't afford me.
And but the show will be broken up into 6-minute segments.
Correct.
And appropriately documented. And
dragged on. The show's going to go for the next 6 months.
I'll tell you what.
Lol.
We'll be charging you to listen to this show. We've got some amazing guests, including the managing partner of Nichols Family Law, Sally Nichols.
Ooh. She's my boss, so you have to behave. You people have to behave.
Oh, I know.
Definitely not, Beck. You're in a lot of trouble.
I spoke to Sally just before we got in. She's not that bad, Beck. I don't know what you're talking about.
What'd she say about me?
It's what she didn't say.
And leading clinical psychologist who does a heap of work in family law, Catherine Boland, will also be joining us to talk about children, the rights of children, and how they have to deal with the courts when it involves, well, them and their families.
Correct.
So stay with us. You're on Joy 94.9. This is Family Matters.
Family Matters at Joy.
Your voice, your radio.
You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9. It's Adrian, Beck and myself, David, in for tonight's show. Now, let's join the conversation if you're out there. SMS us on 0427 joy949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. Anybody's frightened on Monday night, Halloween?
What an excellent lead-in, Dave. Oh. You should be on radio. Adrian, you ask a lot of stupid questions about having kids.
Yeah.
Explain to me this whole Halloween thing.
Well, I'm not sure I can.
When I was a kid, it was just on American movies. No one did
it's
it.
Not
now
our
there's
tradition.
Like kids everywhere.
I said to Tom and Alice, Halloween's not what we do. It's not our thing, so we don't really celebrate it. And Tom in particular had an absolute meltdown. And so we had to do Halloween because he knew it was lollies. And then I said, it's like a pagan ritual. Are you sure? And he was like, what?
Anyway, and he said, I'm 4. I don't know what a pagan ritual is.
So last year we did it for the first time and we wandered around the streets like idiots because... Well, what am I going to do? Just like walk up to a random house and knock on the door?
Awkward.
I'm not going to do that.
But
so we didn't.
It's against everything you tell your children to. Like,
exactly.
Don't talk to strangers.
What
don't go to
stranger
weird
danger?
Houses. Yeah.
So I don't understand how it works. What do I do?
So what did you just roam the streets?
Last year, that's what we did. We roamed the streets. We didn't get any candy. So on the way home, we passed by the pizza shop and got a pizza and ate it in the park. And that was Halloween. And the kids dressed up as like Wonder Woman or whatever it was. And I can't remember what Tom was. And then this year, we got better costumes. The costumes were amazing. And we went...
What did you have this year?
Tom went as... who's that pirate, the Johnny Depp pirate?
Captain Jack Sparrow.
Him. And
ding.
Yes, good. And the Little Mermaid.
Classic.
They're not into doing scary characters.
No.
And then we went to some little festival in St. Kilda opposite from the Greyhound.
Wow. Convenient.
Yeah, then Ralph.
You and Ralph popped into the Greyhound and the kids just went trick-or-treating. Yeah. Fun.
But it was in the park.
And Gay Dad Halloween.
Just doing the locomotion across from the Halloween party.
So that was actually kind of fun. And we stood next to Lavinia Nixon, I think it was, and she did the weather
celebrity
news.
Celebrity spot.
Oh, no, she did the weather. The weather.
No, I mean, you were the celebrity she saw because she'd seen your ad on the billboard.
Funny.
Yeah.
Very amusing.
Yeah. Thanks.
So that's how we did Halloween this year. But what I don't know is how are you meant to do it? Like,
well, I've been told what the plan is. If you're just a random house sitting there on your TV on your couch watching TV, you've got to have your house advertised as you're welcoming for kids. So you're gonna have your house dressed up as a Halloween or maybe a pumpkin out the
seems
front.
Seems like a lot of effort,
and it means that you're an active player in Halloween night.
But what I don't understand is if nobody else is around you, how am I gonna do a Halloween in a car? Am I gonna get the kids in like in the back of the Tarago and like drive up and down the suburbs?
For the five houses in the 12 suburbs.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I
don't get it. Am I expected to have like lollies and stuff at home?
Only if you are like, you know, are joyous and happy and want to, you know.
No, I'm not really.
So I don't know. So what do people do? Do you like organize with your neighbors? That sounds like a lot of work.
You're the dad. You're meant to teach
us
this stuff. Dad and I don't know anything.
Okay, I'll tell you what I did for Halloween. I was sitting watching a bit of TV on and I knock on the door.
And he thought, you know what? Hello, my date's finally here. Yes, Tinder's working again.
I actually got off the couch and quickly ran around this little like bookshelf to hide so they couldn't see me through the door. They couldn't see any movement in the door.
The kids.
Yeah, so I'm on the phone to my dad. I'm like, shit, gotta be quiet, gotta be quiet.
Well, are you serious?
I'm actually hiding because I had nothing to give him.
Oh no!
That
but you
is
see,
so weird.
What I don't understand is like that's what I'm worried about. Like it's so awkward knocking on someone's door and they're like, "Can you?"
Did you have stuff
off?
At your house though?
No, because we ended up in St Kilda, across from the Peel, so we had nothing at our house.
The Peel now.
Yeah, it was a greyhound.
Oh dear, sorry.
Like, I reckon we've uncovered something, David. I think all the gay dads just get in a gang and they go to the Peel
and
the greyhound
the
and leave the kids outside. They're like, oh, dads are just going in there to do some business.
No.
That's what happens, isn't it? Don't lie to us, Adrian.
It's not what happens.
Let's get the greyhound on the phone later on and say, this is for next Halloween, this is
yeah,
what it's
this
all
is
about.
Our idea.
I tell you what, the way it's going, though, they're going to need like a creche, right? They could do big business if they had like a little creche section where you could.
So, Adrian, if you're at the Greyhound for a
Fitness
Halloween,
Fitness First has a creche. Sorry.
So why doesn't the Greyhound? That's right. It's a natural progression.
No, it's not an unusual kind of request, right?
What are you dressing up on the dance floor of the Greyhound on a Halloween night?
I did not go to the Greyhound. Just so we're clear, I was at the park across the road with the kids.
Close enough.
And I went as Batman because that's the costume that was the mask that was available.
And what about Ralph? Were you both Batman?
He went as Iron Man.
They make a nice couple, actually. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so I don't know how. So we are not able to not do Halloween next year. This is something that we are going to have to do every year because the kids want to.
Is this just the world we live in now?
I think it is. Just deal with it. And but what I need to figure out is how do I do the trick-or-treating down the street? I don't quite know.
Well, I think I'm thinking knock on people's
doors. No, well, I'm not going to do that. So I think it was producer Gina suggested I need to do a letterbox drop the week before.
Yeah.
That it I need says
to, what? It explains that Halloween's on for the night and expect kids to be knocking on your door. And if you want to be an active player, you can put some stuff on the outside of your house.
How would you respond if you got that letterbox drop? I just need to confirm.
I'd be like, I'm just going to go out and go to the pub instead. I'll go the Greyhound with Dave.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that's what
I
we'll
don't
have
check
to do.
My mailbox.
Any advice on how you've managed Halloween? I'd love to know.
Text in 0427 Joy 949.
Yeah, but, you know, it does feel like it's a
tradition. A thing now, isn't it?
It's a thing. No, we're just going to have to deal with it.
No.
I don't like it.
No, I don't like it either.
Neither do I.
We are Australia. We're not America. So
that's right.
Find our own things. Like do something for Cup Day or something. Oh, we already do that, don't we?
Or like dress up as a Australian Wildlife Animal Day or something.
A jumbuck.
Kangaroo and Jumbuck Day.
Pleased you asked.
Not sure what I asked.
On Facebook, a friend of mine said Storybook Parade. He lives in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Storybook Parade today. This was on Monday. And I replied, isn't that Halloween? And he said, oh, no, we're not allowed to call it Halloween at our school in Texas because that's a pagan ritual. So we call it Storybook Parade. And the children just need to bring along a book or, you know, that has their character in it. And then they get to show off all their costumes and we give them lollies at school.
So it's kind of like Book Week and Halloween.
Yeah. But again, it kind of sounds like, you know, it's a bit politically correct, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. Everything is these days.
Anyway, you're on Joy, Family Matters, and we will be coming back right after this talking with managing partner of Nichols Family Law, Sally Nichols, and also clinical psychologist, Catherine Boland. I mispronounced that.
Boland.
Oh, you're all over it. On Joy 94.9. You can read.
The life issues that, well, matter. Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
Family Matters on Joy 94.9. Please join the conversation. SMS us on 0427 Joy 949 or email us on air at joy.org.au if you've got any questions for our lovely guest coming up. Now it's that time of the interview, that time of the show where we groove into our interview.
Welcome, Sally Nichols. Did I pronounce it right? Oh, we can put your mic on there. Sorry about that. Is your mic on?
Is it on?
Yes, it is. Wonderful.
Beck, leave the buttons to me.
Yeah. Sorry. I shouldn't touch things.
Now, you're the managing partner of Nichols Family Law, who specialises clearly in family law, but one of the leading practices in certainly Melbourne that specialises in same-sex family law. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right too. And we also act for transgender children. At the moment, transgender kids unfortunately have to seek court permission to get treatment in certain cases. So we actually run a pro bono clinic in that regard. So I've spoken to Megan and Michelle about that in the past.
Wow.
The Royal Kids Hospital. But we also try and do as much advocacy as we can for the community because we feel that there are some significant human rights issues for the community.
Yeah.
And we need to try and provide a voice if we can.
Amazing. So I've got a question. What are some of the most common kind of cases or work that kind of comes your way? What are some of the most common issues that people have that, you know, involve the courts or, you know, lawyers really when it comes to same-sex families?
Well, I think the breakdown, obviously, of a relationship and the position of children and what's going to happen is really the one of the main burning questions that comes before us, also the division of property as well. But I think the one that really heightens the emotions is the position of kids and also the uncertainty of the law. There's so much inconsistency in relation to the law and the community at large. And some of the states vary too in terms of how they actually treat surrogacy, for example, and how they actually deal with birth certificates. And that can be really threatening and stressful for people. But one of our main, concerns, if we can, is to try and actually get the information out there about how to avoid coming to see us.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes.
Yeah, that's a really important message.
We've also got on the line one of the leading clinical psychologists. We're really pleased to have you with us, Catherine Boland. Hello, are you there?
Hi, I am here.
Hello, thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Now, you've got a really fascinating job. Could you tell us a bit more about what you do and kind of what you specialise in?
Yeah, for sure. So I work in Sydney, balmy tropical Sydney this evening. But
thanks for rubbing it in.
Sorry about that. my colleagues and I really specialise in the area of high conflict family disputes, and I specialise in same sex couples at different sort of stages along the road to parenthood, including sort of intended parents who might come along before they're going down the path of wanting to become a parent, discussing the issues and how they might do that in the best possible way, right through to, unfortunately, some of the cases that Sally's describing where things have fallen apart or changed. And I act in a therapeutic capacity and in a different capacity. Sometimes I give evidence to the court when there are disputes about children in same-sex families.
So what's exactly involved in that presentation at the start with prospective parents?
So I guess it sort of depends who's deciding and who the folks are, because, you know, wonderfully there's a diverse group of people who want to be parents. So it could be a lesbian couple who have come in and decide that they want to have kids and are talking about whether they'll use a known versus an unknown donor and what the consequences for each outcome are for them, for their kids, and for the donor if they're going to go down that path.
And keep going, Catherine. That's fine. Sorry.
No. I mean, and on it goes, I guess. Then there might be sometimes we get groups of people, so two gay guys, lesbian couple, and they're all going to do it together. There might be four intended parents. Sometimes lesbians might come in who want to discuss who will carry the first child if they're going to have the first and second child. whether they'll use one woman's eggs. You know, the iterations are endless, actually.
Mm.
And I think also one of the things that I notice is that there's some real complexities for rainbow families in what we do in family law, because you get the situation where, say, a lesbian couple or a gay couple have broken up and they're having a dispute about their children, but then you can also get the situations where there's an intact couple and, for example, had a known donor and have had a dispute with that donor. So there's a lot of complexities, I think, that can happen that probably the heterosexual community doesn't have to deal with.
Yeah, I know. And these are things that I'm not even sure the same-sex communities even or the same-sex couples have thought about. So can I ask a question? So if you're in a straight relationship and you break up, do mothers get some kind of prefer? Are they viewed with preferentially?
No, not.
They're not.
No, they're not. Parents, the biological parents, if you like, of the child, have presumptions in their favour. In that, the court needs to look at whether or not that the child can spend equal time with both parents. All things. That there be no risk to the child, for example, no family violence. There are certain presumptions in favour of biological parents, and that's why we've got a lot of store put on birth certificates and on that presumption.
So there is no preference around male or female or mother or father. I understand that, right? But it is. But biological, so that's interesting. So that's saying that's saying
it's focusing on a child's right to have a meaningful relationship with both parents. It's changed. It's morphed over the years.
Yes.
It used to be that parents would seek custody or access, and they had a proprietal type tone. Well, I've got custody. You've only got access. And then now both parents have what's called parental responsibility, where they make decisions about long-term decisions about a child. And, again, there's a lot of store put on parental responsibility. And if you are the parent, biological parent of a child or a parent under the definition of the Family Law Act, you actually the child has a right to have perhaps a presumption of equal time or at least meaningful or significant and substantial time with the child.
Yeah, right. Mm. Do you find that the way that rainbow families go through a breakup has somewhat different themes to straight families? Does that make sense? Like what I'm asking is, when you see a rainbow family going through a breakup and having to think about the kids, they're, you know, in your experience, more likely to be X or Y or Z than a straight couple?
What do you think, Catherine? I've got my views.
I do.
I'd love to hear yours.
I think it's the same, but it's different.
So, I'm so pleased you cleared that up, Catherine, because I was so confused.
Emotional intelligence comes into it a lot, doesn't it?
Lots. It does. You know, look, loss is loss. Breaking up hurts, it's hard, people get upset, they get fearful. It's all the usual mess of human relationships is the same. We're all humans. But when it comes to the parenting disputes, I think there are really specific things about same-sex families that make it just a little bit more challenging. I mean, first of all, I think, as Sally explained earlier, I think there are all these idiosyncrasies about the law, and people feel unsure and they don't necessarily get the right advice or get the right advice early. They're scared. So I think that can make things feel difficult. I think in the case of lesbian parents, there is a real vulnerability for the non-biological mum, and I think that that can make her feel very frightened about what might happen. Would there, even though the law isn't this way, people often feel that the biological mother might get preference when it comes to what will happen with the children.
But didn't Sally say that that's actually the case?
There's an exception under Act now that if a lesbian couple are in a domestic relationship at the time of conception, then the non-biological mum is recognised as a parent.
Really?
Mm. Yep.
And is that for gay guys as well?
No, it's so different. Unfair.
So many nooks and crannies of the law in this place that I just don't understand.
But I think why Catherine is saying before this 60H came in, before that was the case. I acted for non-biological mums and mums, and it was heartbreaking. I remember a really early case I did. It was just, I felt awful about it. It was a three-year-old child, and the report writer in this case, obviously not Catherine, but said there was no relevance. The non-biological mum had no relevance to this three-year-old.
Mm.
Even though she was there at the time of conception, she was there throughout the birth and loved this child as her own. Back then, before the new laws came in, well, relatively new laws, there was a bias towards the birth mum.
So speaking more of the nooks and crannies, what are some of the more misconceptions that clients are sort of come across?
I think a lot of lesbians don't realise that they're both the parents of the child. I think that's a big misconception. A lot of non-biological mum lesbians don't realise that.
Quite from the historical issue. Mm. It was. Do you agree, Catherine?
Totally agree with that. Yep, I totally agree. They don't know. Some women just aren't aware that law reform has happened and they can both be on the birth certificate. I think that they also don't know that they've got parental responsibility. Mm. And I think that comes up quite a bit.
But do you think also too that you just find from an emotional or psychological point of view, if they haven't given birth, they do feel somehow they haven't, they're not the real mother or they're not as important? Is there anything?
Look, I think it really is changing a lot, thankfully. I think, look, the bottom line is the research that's been done in this country looking at lesbian parents says that, especially for the first child, that the non-bio mum can really feel excluded from that the validation of, like, external family members, you know, grandparents, her parents, relatives don't know what to do, especially if they're the known donor.
Yep.
You know, the child doesn't look like her. Having a newborn baby is a pretty stressful thing on any couple anyway. And if the biological mum isn't able to fully embrace her partner as the child's other parent and becomes a bit exclusive, then actually that can just cause a few little rifts early on. And those things, you know, if it goes ugly, can get extremely ugly in court cases. And like you, Sally, I've just seen the most vicious, ugly court cases from really lovely women in this case who sort of acted as if that non-biological mother was not important, or have sort of rewritten history as if, you know, biology suddenly becomes important when we bust up. And I think that's just so sad, but I've seen it quite a few times.
Have you seen an increase in gay guys having to go through kind of obtaining legal advice around kids or any, or is it like 95% mainly, you know, lesbian women still?
Well, my experience of Sally can probably talk from a legal perspective. I reckon I see lots of guys in two different capacities. One is being donors and figuring out what that means, and you know, the range from I definitely only want to be a donor, I want the child to know me and be a bit involved, right through to I want a co-parent. And then the other way I see guys are guys who are becoming parents through surrogacy.
Yeah, right. So that would be a lot more common, I guess, these days. And especially, again, I don't even know if what I'm saying is even true or not, but right through IVF in Australia. So it's not even overseas surrogacy. It can be altruistic surrogacy within Australia now that that's possible, but they need to go through counselling and all that kind of stuff, right?
And the laws are just so, they're different in every state. We really need a referral of powers. So there's one common law, because they're different in relation to surrogacy in each state, adoption in each state, although there's some news in Queensland today.
I heard.
Mm.
Yes, I heard that was great. Look, let's talk about that when we come back and more. We're talking to Sally Nichols, who's the managing partner of Nichols Family Law, and also clinical psychologist Catherine Boland on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Joy Family Matters. It's 94.9, of course. Adrian, you're laughing
you
at me.
You lost it, Dave.
It's doing two things at once, Beck, that's confusing
him. You don't want to set him up with someone.
Yeah, well, we are.
Oh, we've got a hashtag, Find David Dave.
Hashtag Find David Dave.
I'm constantly trying to set Dave up with people, and Sally thinks she is the world's greatest Cupid. So if anyone's going to find someone, it'll be her.
I promise text you it's not with clients.
Yeah.
Text in your perfect date to 0427JOY949.
So when Dave does get a date, what contractual safeguards does he need to put in place before
for
he...
fatherhood.
Don't bring it up on the first date. That's my advice.
Prenup? You think he needs the prenup?
Well, look, let's ask this. Come on, let's yeah. bring this up.
Come on.
So,
Dave's on the table.
Dave's met a lovely guy. His name's
Pete.
Doug. Oh no, Dave.
I'm going to go for Bruce.
Bruce.
Good. I don't know any of those names.
I'm with Bruce.
Nothing.
Dave's met Bruce, and they're just a sweet couple.
I don't like Bruce yet, but I'll get to.
But they're not talking about kids. They're just, you know, in a domestic relationship.
Yep.
Do they need to come and see, you know, Catherine, Sally or Beck?
Well, Dave might want to protect all his joy volunteer salary from his money-hungry man that's after him. So he might want to look at a prenup.
Seven figures.
But a prenup's not an Australian thing, right?
Well, we call them binding financial agreements, but it's the same
thing. It's not as sexy.
No, it doesn't sound as hot. Kanye West sings less about binding financial agreements.
No, but
that one, Catherine.
Come on, Catherine, help me out here.
But I think if you're considering having kids, I think Catherine might be the person to talk to.
But
they're not having kids. They're not at this stage.
Oh. I just want to understand if anyone's listening and they're in a, you know, do they binding financial relationship each other? But you know, even if they're not going to have kids, does that become something to think about?
It's not very romantic.
Well, it isn't. But you know, so if someone's got lots of money, right?
Tell me who they are.
I think that
Bruce is full of loaded.
Well, then we don't want to.
Not interested.
You don't want a prenup, Dave. Leave it all up for grabs, mate. Okay, that's my advice.
So let's pretend Dave's loaded.
Oh, he might want one.
What does this binding do?
It really depends. It contracts out of the Family Law Act. So if you were to break up and you didn't have an agreement, then you would actually get advice about a very boring, compared to what else we're talking about, four-step process of how your assets would be divided. And it would really have the impact of how long you've been together, who started with what. You'd be able to get a range of what you'd actually be entitled to. But what happens with people, particularly, for example, Beck and I gave a chat to one football club that remains nameless, where she blushed and got very embarrassed. But
it was the most exciting and awkward day of my life.
Yeah, we were stereotyping the footy players because they actually earn a lot of them – stereotypically, a lot of money in a short amount of time, and they'll never earn that sort of money again. And they didn't realise that they were in de facto relationships. And so Beck took them through what constituted a de facto relationship. And some of them in those circumstances were quite keen to have agreements that would actually protect their assets because they didn't realise they'd be exposed.
$282,000 average wage for an AFL footballer.
So
Dave's checked. Don't worry.
So does this? So this means anyone listening who's been living with their other half for more than 6 months is in a de facto relationship.
Might not even live together.
Oh right, okay. So if you're in a relationship, you're basically
there's been disputes about what constitutes a de facto relationship, and not to bring it back to the kids issues again, but there's been disputes because at the time of conception for the non-biological parent, it's a huge impact about whether or not they're actually in a de facto relationship. And there's been some recent cases on that.
Let's discuss Dave and Bruce.
Oh,
they want kids.
Very sexy.
Want kids. They're definitely going to bring in kids.
We're painting our walls blue and pink as we speak.
Catherine, what should they be thinking about?
Well, they need a uterus. Well,
excellent advice, Catherine.
Rent a womb.
Let's say they're going to do
they
it.
They can have mine.
Let's say so they're going to.
Okay.
That's my Catherine.
Beck. We're going to use Beck's uterus.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's
wow.
why Catherine's got doctors. Yeah. A doctor
yeah.
in front of her.
Okay. So Dave and Bruce have got my uterus.
Okay. Oh, yours. Okay. You are acting as a surrogate, or are you going to do this as a co-parenting gag? What's the arrangement?
I think we'll do co-parenting. I think it'll be fine.
Oh my, poor kid.
Okay. Well, they're good friends, Catherine. So what could go wrong, right?
You had a breath test.
Indeed, what could go wrong? So whose sperm are we using?
Mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, Bruce.
Poor Bruce. But, you know, actually Sally can jump in here because this now we're starting to paint a legal picture now, because it actually means, bizarrely, that the legal parents of this child are not you and Bruce.
Beck and her partner, potentially.
Yeah. So if Beck's got a partner, it's going to be...
I'd have to find one, but let's assume I do.
Okay. Okay. So
use your imagination, listeners.
Yeah. Even though the boys say they're going to be doing this with Beck, if she's got a partner, her partner and her are the legal parents of the child.
Mm.
So we've already got the first little tricky bit, that the legal parentage is going to be different to perhaps the intended psychological parents of this little baby.
So I'm a bit confused. So Bruce and I are looking after the child. Beck's the co-parent, but all of a sudden Beck's partner or boyfriend...
Let's call him Rory Sloan.
Okay, Adelaide football. So Rory Sloan has now all of a sudden got rights to my kid.
Prima facie, yeah, because...
No, but it's not. Wow. Rory's not the bio dad.
No, you know, Dave, of course not.
Dave got a turkey baster, and so Dave's the bio dad, right?
No.
No.
Oh, he's not a biological dad, yeah, well, but not the legal parent. Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. The legal...
So there's another... Yeah, the thing is, I mean, Sally, you correct me on this, right, but if a woman is in a relationship, her partner is the parent of that child.
That's right.
So what if that's after the... Like, let's say the child's 6 years old by then and Beck finds a partner.
No, it's at the time of conception.
Time of conception only.
Time of conception, right, okay. So interesting. So is there something that you can do contractually to get around that?
Not contractually. You'd need to actually apply to the court and actually...
post the event?
Bruce and Dave would need to get parental responsibility orders. And I think Dave could get a declaration of parentage because he's a biological parent, but Bruce couldn't. He'd have to get parental responsibility orders.
And what's a parental responsibility order? We're into exciting territory, and I tell you why. I have a feeling it might be relevant to my situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, Adrian, you might want to start writing some stuff down.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So at this stage, you know, I have my partner and I have twins via surrogacy, and you know, I don't really understand the detail of it, but I've always assumed that we're probably not like legally parents, or maybe one of us is, or I'm not really sure, but it doesn't really change my life in any way, so I've never really thought about it anymore. No one's claiming parentage over the children, and they've lived with us from kind of day one since they were born.
Mm. And so how did they came into the country via... How did they come into the country?
Not by... they came in via plane. So we went to India. We went to India. They were born. We had them as soon as they were born. We took their birth... They got citizenship in India. They got their birth certificates in India. They got their emergency passport. And within a couple of weeks, we were on the plane back to Australia.
And the basis of their passport would have been...
Citizenship by descent.
By the biological dad.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's right, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear, I don't like the look. I don't like where this is going.
I was just wondering, do we know a good lawyer?
Yeah.
If you find one, let us know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so really...
You know, the thing with all of this, though, I always think, you know, gay men and lesbians make... Actually, it seems the best parents when we look at the outcomes of the children. They're not only, you know, do as well as children in straight families, but usually better when we look at every index of, you know, a child's outcome and development. But the problem is there's heaps of things that people just don't anticipate, and this is probably true of family law in general. And I guess, you know, maybe the reason there's that stone-cold silence is because, you know, I guess for those of us who work in the area, we've seen... You know, things that happen when one person dies or they split up or...
And people become positional all of a sudden.
What's positional mean?
Well, rather than looking through the lens of a child, rather than thinking, and that's what I'm sure Catherine will try and encourage parties who are in conflict to try and do, to put aside their agendas and think, well, what's best for... We've broken up, but what's actually best for our child?
Mm.
All of a sudden they'll be sitting on their legal rights rather than thinking, well, the reality is we've raised this child for 6 years and we love this child. The child views us as parents and so do all the extended family. However, I'm just going to try and sit on my rights. I'm a biological parent. I've got the presumptions, you know, in my favour, and they can try and just make it tricky. You can overcome it, and we've seen also in the litigation. We've got someone like Catherine will come in and say, "But no, the child's got a strong attachment. You're effectively the parent," and you'll get the court to actually recognise that with these parental responsibility orders, which are like the old guardianship type orders we used to get. But it's just sad, isn't it, Catherine, to see people suddenly become positional rather than rather than focusing on the child.
And I assume you're going to want to get those, but you can avoid some of this by getting the parental responsibility orders up front.
Up front, but also too, I think going to see somebody before you approach your donor or before you enter into the arrangements to get over some of those hiccups that Catherine was mentioning before. I think Jack Tomlins has put out that fantastic Robo Family study that we really refer people to, our clients to, is to ask the hard questions first. What have, particularly with co-parenting, don't you think, Catherine?
I 100% agree with you. I mean, the thing is that making a decision about parenting is really hard in the best of circumstances. You know, you just don't think about things until they arise. And I think the thing that blows people away, all the lesbians and gay men I've worked with, they had no idea before the child was born how they were going to feel, and the intensity of their feelings really surprised them.
The problem I've got actually is I haven't, you know, we haven't gone through the parental orders because I don't want to ask the court to give me parental rights over my child, and I'm not sure, but more than that, you know, the kids are five. So 4 years ago, I didn't feel confident that I knew what the outcome would be. Like if I came to you 4 years ago and said, "Hey, we want to get parental orders," what would a judge could you have said? Oh no, this is clean cut. There's no issue here. A judge is going to say it's okay, and that's part of the reason why we didn't do it either.
What would have offended you? And I understand it does offend people. Is that to get it through, we might have suggested that there be a report that went through, and that's I think offensive.
That's really and it's not just, and it's kind of offensive, but also like, but what if they say no? What if they do a report and the judgment is no, you cannot? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's really scary.
I don't
that's
actually really know. Scary. I'm kind of afraid of that. So we just never did it and said, you know what, maybe when the kids are 5 or 10, I'll go back and I'll be able to say, look at this thick manual of evidence of how we've both been parents of this child. How could you dare say no at this stage? You know, I think there was a lot of that went through our mind as well.
That's understandable. It's just the law needs to keep up. There needs to be some sort of, I think, consistency. Not only is it silly that there's inconsistency between the Artificial Reproduction Treatment Acts, the Victorian Acts, but also in relation to the Family Law Act. There's inconsistent advice being given, for example, at some of the IVF clinics because they're relying upon state law. And there's just some inconsistency with the federal law. And we had one case where it was quite clear that single women were being given the advice that donors didn't have any parental rights. But in fact, if they were single at the time of conception and a donor came forward, they actually were a parent for the purposes of the Family Commonwealth, the Federal Act, even though Victorian Act
we haven't even touched on that. We're going to have to go to an ad.
That's
but
a teaser. That's
will,
a teaser.
You're right. You're very good. We're going to come back with a bit more of that right after this on Joy 94.9. It's Family Matters.
You're listening to Family Matters with any combination of Gina, Adrian, Michelle, David and Beck. Joy 94.9.
So just a quick question on that same subject before. So Bruce and I, we have a six-year-old child, Beck's the co-parent, and we've decided that we want to move to France. Beck doesn't want us to move overseas.
Catherine's laughing.
Sorry.
Catherine, can you help?
You're not going.
Oh, au revoir. No, not quite.
How old's the child?
6 years old. So age matters? For the child?
I mean, it depends. Does the child, is it a little girl or a little boy?
It's a boy, little Charlie.
Charlie, okay. Does Charlie see Beck?
Yeah.
Yeah, he pops
every
around,
second weekend.
Pops around for the footy game here and there.
Oh, yeah, we go to the footy together, yeah.
Go to the footy, okay. Every second weekend?
Yeah,
I think you're not going straight to Paris.
Can I say,
not without my agreement?
But can't he just like leave? Or like
What are you encouraging here, Adrian?
No, no. What I'm asking is, but I don't understand how you can stop it. Like, can't he just go to Paris? I mean, he's got.
Well, remember that little tricky thing we said before about legal parenting? That Beck is, unless you've got orders otherwise, she's the legal parent.
And also too.
No, but can Beck say he's in Paris? Oh, hang on a second. He's not there for a holiday. He's now moving and staying there forever.
Abducted my child.
I think he might have effectively abducted the child under the Hague Convention.
Oh,
now yeah. We're in a whole other world.
I mean, this is where you need 60 minutes to help out at this stage, right?
You would.
The answer is no, you don't.
There's an international treaty between about only 78 countries, including France and Australia, that if you're exercising custodial rights, and that can even be just seeing a child. Beck might not even have parental responsibility, but we know that's all up in the air at the moment with your scenario. You're a bit vague, you people.
Yeah.
You and people.
You and Bruno, I tell you.
Bruce.
Oh, sorry.
Bruno's another complication.
A great movie.
Bruno lives in France. That's why I want to head there.
He's from Austria.
Is he? Oh, God.
Have you seen Bruno?
But you get into some interesting areas.
But it would be. There'd be an issue there. You'd because Beck would be effectively exercising custodial rights, even if she was just seeing the child. So you'd need her permission.
Mm.
Otherwise, you might be breaching an international treaty.
So does the child's age play? Is that what you were hinting at before?
Oh, it's just if you were applying to the court, if Beck won't agree and she tried to stop you from leaving and you were given legal advice about this Hague Convention, then you might have to apply to the court to actually relocate for all the good reasons. And what someone like Catherine would be looking at is the attachment, whether the child why it would be in the best interest of the child to move with you to France.
Right. Away from me.
Away
it's mother.
Away from the footy
the footy
friend.
Loving, yeah.
What, Catherine, don't you think, I mean, you've had to look at relocation issues and you'd be having to explore that, the impact on the child.
Absolutely.
Can I ask another question? I've been somewhat of the opinion that if Australia had really robust commercial surrogacy laws that required the appropriate checks and balances in it for all parties that are involved in a commercial surrogacy relationship, that will possibly lead to better outcomes for children and families, because it forces some of these conversations to be had up front, and no one is unclear about parentage and, you know, rights and what they can and can't do, because in the absence of these kind of laws, people do things that are considered more risky and they don't appropriately safeguard themselves. That's kind of been my position. I'm interested in as experts, your thoughts on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've had Rodney from Gay Dads on from in the past, and Rodney's really spot on about these issues. What the concerns I know from Gay Dads, for example, is that the surrogacy opportunities are just moving from country to country now that Thailand's banned surrogacy.
Cambodia's out now, yep.
Mm. Well, Cambodia's out, yeah. Because they have no domestic laws. Well, I was actually in there giving a speech 2 weeks ago looking at the international obligations and a child's right to their identity. But what concerned a few of us there was if there was no regulation, they've got human trafficking issues there too. Mm. So I really agree with you that if we had commercial surrogacy here and regulated appropriately, then you wouldn't have that. I think that desperate outreach to countries that don't have proper protocols with our immigration department anyway.
Yeah.
And I never forget having one client who just fessed up just by the by that he and his partner had an embryo in Nepal and it was lost during the earthquakes and they couldn't contact the organisation. So, but for all they knew, their embryo had been implanted, and even though it couldn't be in a Nepalese woman because it was illegal for a Nepalese woman, but it was the Indian surrogates who were moving over. So it's just it's a complete mess.
Mm.
And I think regulation here would be meaningful and could be good, but I also think that the states need to refer all their powers to the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
So throughout Australia, you have a common law. And I also think we should stop fiddling around with birth certificates and just issue parents with parenting certificates. That's another thought, because I think that you need to have the same access to gay dads as you do to lesbian mums. And we need to get another regime that recognises people who are actually operating as parents and can be better parents, even though they're non-biological parents.
And Catherine, how often do you see people enter into, become parents, but you know, and they kind of do it in that example we talked about there with Beck and David, where they're kind of friends and it's a bit
casual.
It's a bit casual because they're good friends and they're like, well, we've been friends for 10 years and, you know, yeah. And you know, that where does that natural, not, but where does that often lead? And I'm just interested in your kind of advice for people thinking about this stuff that might be listening.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I don't want to give you the horror stories because I know there are so many great stories about that happening. But I guess I've got a really painted view of it because, you know, often when they come to me, it's those situations that have fallen apart and they've relied on, because we got on well as friends or we had great holidays or we even lived in a shared household together, we could just do this. And I think sort of in a right frame of mind, people think the more the merrier, take the village to raise a child, you know, we'll be one great big rainbow family. But they just don't think about things like, well, what if I get the job, my dream job in Paris? Or, how do I feel when actually my partner's sitting there with the baby, breastfeeding the baby, and the donor comes in or the dad comes in, everyone's going, oh, look at you, he looks just like you, Dad. And I'm sitting there, you know, the non-bio mum's sitting there like she's nothing. They just don't think about that. What's the baby or child going to call everyone? Who makes the decisions and how do you deal with those when they're a complex?
And I think the other thing, Catherine, that I see a lot of too is the involvement of grandparents and parents of donors or donors' families and the biological and the non-biological mums' families. And people often, I think, haven't had those conversations with their extended families.
Completely right. And I think, look, for some gay and lesbian people who, and maybe this is outdated now, but certainly previously, you know, it wasn't an easy thing to become a parent. You had to really put a lot of effort into it.
Mm.
You can't, you know, just go and do it quickly. And I think sometimes the intensity of emotion around that when you do become a parent, especially if it involves your parents, you know, the child's grandparents in a way that they hadn't been before, that can be, you know, inviting a whole new part of your life that you hadn't dealt with before.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's been an incredibly informative show. Thank you. I want to really thank you for all your advice and, well, not advice because it wasn't legal advice. There were appropriate disclaimers around this show. I'd like everyone listening to know that. we did have a couple of SMSs coming in, including from Dave's auntie Andrea, who said, great show, very informative.
Thank you.
She's now, auntie Andrea.
She hadn't heard of Bruce and Bruno and Charlie. And, yeah, that's right. So it's really been great. Thank you very much to Sally Nichols, from Nichols Family Law, and also Catherine Boland, who has joined us by phone from Sydney. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
And
thank you.
Wonderful. And next week we're talking to known sperm donor Daniel, who'll talk us through what he's gone through.
Oh, he's great.
Oh, you know Daniel?
Oh, yes.
Oh, because he's known. I understand. Everyone knows. That's smaller
he's
community. Yeah.
You'll be comfortable with that, Adrian.
He's a known donor.
No awesome. Talk of
now,
lessons.
Sally, we're going to have you back in, I reckon. We could have gone for 2 hours.
Yeah, we could.
I still have a job,
okay.
Assumedly.
For now. But I think we need Catherine back again too. We need to look at the success stories.
Yeah.
Let's have a positive.
There's so many of them.
Actually, maybe we go on for 2 hours. Can we just sit into the woods? We'll stay on for 2 hours.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, give us a thumbs up.
So if you're thinking about being a sperm donor, tune in next week. We'll be giving you all the lowdown on that.
And that's a success story. That's a good one.
Is that?
That's a goodie.
Appropriate with a clear up front about roles and responsibilities. Did they do a racy?
No, but it worked out well.
Also, big thank you to Machine on the desk as well, as always. Well done. Thank you.
Coming up next, we've got our favourite bears with the woods.
Wolfgur.
Oh, wow.
You love that. Dave practices that all week.
I do.
You're on Joy 94.9. Thank you, Beck. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Adrian. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you, Dave.
My shirt.
You're on Joy Family Matters.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.